All right, we're live. Well, first of all, so welcome to the Charity Charge Show. This is our new studio that we're testing out our new home for it. So thanks for being the first guest.
Absolutely. It's good to be here. And I like the platform, by the way. It's a really smooth look and feel, and I like it.
I'm still messing around with some different stuff, but I can just isolate it. I believe I'm going to try something out just on me, and then I can put you in there. I got to play around a little bit more, but I kind of like this zoomed out look, but I appreciate it. I know we're just kind of getting to know one another, but I've been trying to figure out different ways to highlight, different guests that come on the show. And so far, everything I've done with the podcast has been, I've used Zoom a little bit, but to capture video, but mostly it's been for audio, and then we've turned those into blogs and stuff. So hoping that this provides, a new medium.
Yes.
But we could totally use this right now. I mean, I'm game to change up any format. I mean, while we're recording, this is really just you and I. And so I'm really glad that Rob put us in touch. I know, but you want to give me some background? I mean, just because I know you had chatted with Kevin, and I know you just wanted to get to know me, and I'm here to get to know you.
I know, that's all it is, man. Yeah, so my background is this, is that I was a pastor for 21 years. And I began to become a little disenfranchised with how church was working, to be honest with you, because we were talking about loving God and loving other people, but I saw the church doing very little to partner with local businesses and local nonprofits and local schools to really be making a difference according to what the community needed, not what the church wanted to do. In other words, when churches do what they call outreach, it's always on their terms in most cases. And they've got to put their name on it. And it's got to be about them because it's about marketing and positioning and all of this, right? And I went, that just doesn't feel right. So long story short, we moved to the Washington, D.C. area, actually start a church. But we didn't want to start a church that looked like every other church. So what we did is we started a nonprofit first, and we started mobilizing people regardless of their faith, regardless of their social economics, regardless of their race, regardless of everything. We just started mobilizing people to do what's naturally in them, to serve other people. Because here's what we found is that most people in this world and in America want to be generous. Most people want to serve, and they just simply need ways to do that that remove the barriers. So long story short, we empowered 600 people in our community to create 40,000 meals in less than 2 hours to feed local children struggling with hunger. And within 2 weeks of doing that event, we started getting phone calls from other community leaders across the country saying, listen, we hear what you're doing. We need you to come to our community. Will you come? And before you know it, we went from the Washington, D.C. area, and then we were doing events all the way over in Oregon. And 9 years later, we're in 29 states. We have 64,000 volunteers. We've worked with over 200 businesses, over 200 nonprofits. Our volunteers have created over 3.3 million meals to help sustain over 165,000 children who live with food insecurity. So, Stephen, there's the short on what has happened and even why we're standing here today. And of course, I got to know our mutual friend, Rob Lowe, through all of that as well. So
thank you so much for sharing all of that. I want to tell you that, first of all, that is incredible. I as this was going on, I zoomed in, I figured out how to kind of make this go like solo layout and stuff. But I had a huge smile on my face. It's unbelievable. Your, I think first and foremost, like ability to change direction, recognize that you weren't comfortable with the status quo and to do something about it. And then to hear about how you scaled is incredible. I need to tell you that a lot of people have asked me, and I even had a call respectfully actually with this marketing guru yesterday. And she was like, well, what's the purpose of your podcast? And what are you trying to accomplish? What are your marketing objectives? And for me, this has always been about creating a medium to get to know someone else that we work with. And as we've had our own scale, I've become less and less connected to the amazing people like yourselves that are a part of the Charity Charge community. And we're just playing a small role in what you're doing and what so many other amazing organizations are doing. But this is what gives me the passion and helps me be more connected and grounded to literally what's going on versus the day-to-day of the just the operational task. Exactly. So you've really helped me. I just want to say that to be more inspired. I think that's incredible what you guys are doing. First of all, just on a tactical side, or just a random kind of question here. I'm based and lived in Austin, Texas now. I'm born and raised in Baltimore. So you mentioned the DC. Are you still in that vicinity, or where are you guys headed?
We've moved our family down to Raleigh, North Carolina now because it's so much less expensive to live here. It was a pure economic move. Our warehouse is sitting in Williamsburg, Virginia, which, as you know, is a beautiful area.
Busch Gardens.
But say again?
Busch Gardens.
Yes, that's right.
The theme park,
That's right. And then when I was talking with Kevin a few weeks ago, I found out you were in Austin. We were just in Austin back in March running what we called Pop Austin, where we brought together 100 of some of the most influential entrepreneurs in Austin to do a fundraising event and get them networking and connecting. And all. I mean, it was an incredible night in downtown Austin at the Townsend, actually. Live band, drinks. I mean, it was incredible. So when that happens again, you're invited. Well, like, you should have been on that list. I just hadn't met you yet.
I know. It's too bad that we just missed each other, but I'm glad to know that you know, Austin's in your heart. So it's wonderful.
It is.
That you have that connection there with that. That's amazing.
That's right. Stephen, I'd love to hear kind of what's the story behind the story of Charity Charge. And I ask it that way because what I find is that so often people have a mission, right? And anyone through this podcast can come to your website and read your mission. But I find that there's often a mission behind the mission. There is something that is deep in your soul that has driven you to start an organization like this. I'd love to hear that story, the story that maybe people wouldn't see on the website that brought you to this point of starting an amazing organization.
I'm humbled. I appreciate that you would even couch the question in that way. And I agree with you. I mean, so I'll share some kind of a little bit of behind the scenes things with you. I've always been a creative person by nature. And I really look at myself as an artist, the more that I've gotten to know just who I am. You know, now I'm 34 and I'm always learning about myself. But the more and more that I get older, I don't think of myself as an entrepreneur or a social entrepreneur, or some people say, oh, you're a fintech entrepreneur, which is like a big buzzword in the investment and venture capital type of communities. But I, obviously was inspired by people like the Steve Jobs of the world and the people that create one product or a product and it can touch billions of people, you know, globally. But I think probably the biggest inspiration for why I've stuck with doing what I'm doing has to do with my parents. Both of them, quite frankly, I think, however, my father, when I was 19, he passed away from cancer. And it really made me realize, and it was a really deep, deep loss. I was extremely close with my dad. He was just a wonderful guy, a great role model, for me and my brother. And he was 53 at the time. I mean, and now I'm 19. So how old are you, Ron?
I'm 48, but we don't want to tell anyone that.
Well, my point with the question was that, you know, at 19, I would have thought 48 or 53 was old, but now at 34, I realize how young it is. I mean, at 53, it was a really young, you know, vibrant, energetic guy, ran, liked to run. He would go for a run every morning, that type of person. And when he passed away, it really hit me. It's always cliche, like life's short, but I really realized that. And it was at a time, you know, in college, I went to a competitive college, Washington University in St. Louis. It's, you know, a lot of kids are doing really great things, obviously, with their lives, but everybody was trying to go a very more normal corporate route or getting into investment banking. A lot of people in my peer circles, which bless them, that's fine if that's their path. But I just started to wonder, like, what was the purpose of life, you know, and why was I here? And I very much so, you know, also respected the fact that I had this creative element inside of me. And I, throughout my life, early on as a little kid, whenever we would host Thanksgiving or other family type of events, I would set up a little stand in front of our house and try to sell like trinkets, or even, with McDonald's, you would get, as part of the Happy Meals, you'd get little toys, and I would have those up for sale or whatever. And then I would wash cars in the summer. I plowed driveways as a kid. So I always did have a little bit of that entrepreneurial, you know, element through me, and did a handful of different small scale ventures through my teens and whatnot. But I think that the biggest inspiration really about starting this is to try to do something now as a means to give back. I think that everybody has a capacity to give, and we can give on whatever level we want to. However, just what I'm trying to do is, instead of just being an independent organization or an independent company doing direct service, I thought, what if we could provide tools to the entire nonprofit community? That, to me, could create a lot of scale and like multiplicative effects. And where I get the most, and I shared it kind of in the beginning of this interview, where I've gotten the most joy is knowing that we're a part of Powering Replenish Foundation now, and that we're a part of other organizations. That, to me, there's a, I probably might come up with a different word for it, but there's ego in that. But I look at it as positive ego, like a real sense of problem satisfaction. So happy to elaborate on any more, but a lot of it was just through the loss of my father. And I think the last point I'd say of what you're an inspiration for is having these moments in our lives, like you went through when you were at the church and realized that there's a better use of your time and talents for the world, to serve the world, and you've shifted to be starting and scaling Replenish Foundation. I think that if you look at the traditional norms and how at least I was raised within philanthropy, it was this notion of become really successful and rich, and then when you retire and you've accumulated millions of dollars, at that point, you know, set up a foundation, at that point, like, figure out how to give back. So I just have tried to go at it right now throughout my life of, what are ways that my work can do charitable work at the same time? And how do we just have that intersection early rather than waiting later to give back?
You know, what I love about your story, Stephen, is that what I'm going to refer to as still young in life, right? You're really at the front end of your career. You've taken the time to reflect, to be mindful of who you are, your own story, and to align what you do in life with your passions. And I think so many people, in fact, I know most people never capture what you've already captured. They're sitting at age 45 or 55 going, oh my God, when can I quit my job and go work for a nonprofit? And the problem with that scenario is that the moment they leave their work, they're also leaving their circle of influence. Reality is, I think that especially in North America, all of us, anyone that chooses it, can align their work with their passion. Or another way that we talk about it in the Replenish Foundation with some of the masterclasses that I teach is how we can go about bringing meaning into our work. And it's so doable. In fact, it only takes four questions to do that. What do you love? What are you good at? What value do you bring the world? and what can you get paid for? You answer those four questions.
Wait a sec.
Boom. Magic.
You just channeled that, like this conversation. He shared your message with me. And I hadn't connected the dots, but tell us again, and I'm even going to try this within there because there's a lot of power when he put me through a little bit of that.
Yeah.
Check this out. So tell me the first question.
So the first question is, what do you love? And what do you love can be a really difficult question because I can say in one statement, well, I love tacos. And then I can turn around and look at my wife and go, honey, I love you. And so this idea of love can really get mixed up in our culture. In fact, when I was asking my now father-in-law, this is a long time ago, if I could marry my wife, you know, if I could have permission to marry his daughter, my wife, he asked me this question. He goes, how do you know you love her? I didn't know how to answer that. And the reason I didn't know how was because I love tacos. What was I going to do? Well, I have this feeling. Well, here's the problem. Feelings come and go. How could I communicate to him that my love for her would not just come and go, but my love would be for a lifetime?
How did you do that?
So when we talk about this question of what do I love in this mastermind we go into, we dive into really fine tuning the core of that question. What's in the core of our being? Of how you or I or another person are uniquely wired. What do we uniquely love? So that's the first question. Second question is, what are you good at? Now, this one can get a little weird too. And this, by the way, needs to flow out of love. So as we answer these questions, all the questions should overlap, right? So what are you good at? And here's where this gets tricky. Some people think they're really good at something and they actually suck at it. Think America's Got Talent in the opening weeks. We're all sitting there cringing like, oh my God, is that person for real? Do they really think they're good at this when we all know they suck? And so what do we feel? We feel this cringe factor, right?
Yeah.
We get tense, it's awkward. So what we don't ever want is we don't want the world around us to cringe at the fact that we think we're good at something that we actually suck at. So the key here now is to answer very honestly, and even bringing other people into our lives to answer very honestly, well, what are you good at? Or take it the next level, what are you great at? But again, that should pull out of your love. For example, my wife is great at administrative work. But if she was in the room with us today, she would tell you she hates administrative work. So just because we're good at something doesn't mean we should do something. It needs to come out of that first question, what do you love? So you can see how they start building on each other. Third question is what does the world need? This is your value question. What does the world need? This is the value question. This is the value you bring the world. Because here's a reality. If we want life to work well, then all of us, like you've done with Charity Charge, need to solve a problem. When I heard about Charity Charge, I was like, oh my God, finally someone is doing this. Why? Because I had to leverage my personal credit line to the tune of $75,000 on a monthly basis to run the organization I run.
Welcome to the club.
That's mind-blowing, isn't it? You met a need. You solved a problem. Every person needs to be solving a problem. That's the value. You've added value to my life, and I haven't even met you till today, right? So, and you're doing this for so many others, and we all have that opportunity. What value are you going to bring the world? What does the world need that you're going to give the world? And there are some other questions that we can ask there. I won't go into those that help zero that in. But again, the answer needs to come out of what do you love? And it needs to come out of, secondly, what are you great at? What are you good at? And then how are you going to take those two things to solve a problem in the world? And then the last question is this. It's what can you be paid for? because it has to be sustainable. Most of us are not sitting at a place in life where we've got this nest egg where we can kind of just do whatever we want. We have to do it in a way that is sustainable for our families as well as other people and for the planet. That's even a bigger conversation. So what can you be paid for? And then it's a matter of choosing your pathway. And there are three pathways we can choose. One pathway is drop and go. This is the person that says, I'm just done. I'm quitting my job and I'm going to go do what I want to do, right? That's a little risky unless you got a big wad of cash sitting on your disposal so that when things don't go as you plan, you can still make life work. The second is stay the course. A lot of people need to actually stay in their job that they're in, and they need to infuse their purpose, their significance, the power of who they are into their work. Stay the course. And in that, we help people work through how to do that. And then the third course is go slow. In other words, start doing some stuff of purpose outside of your work and allow that to energize you and envision you and give you this energy and a new passion for your work. And there are a lot of stories that I could share with you of people that we work with along those lines too. So there's the overview.
Yeah, where would, you've talked about the master classes, where would someone who's interested in this find out about it? And this is why I love this community that we have and this ability for us to connect this initial time, because I was unaware of that type of work that you're doing. So this is new for me, for anyone who's, you know, following along, but it's so inspiring and awesome to learn, to know that you're facilitating these. So where would I learn more?
So the easiest way, because again, that website's also being built. Okay. So all my websites right now are being built. So just email me at ron@replenishfoundation.org. The class is for free. I will send it to you. So it's yours, right? So just shoot me an email, ron@replenishfoundation.org, and I'll send you a link.
I got you on the ticker.
Yep.
Right there.
There you go. That easy.
Mess around with this. Let me dive actually a little deeper on that, because I have a practical question for you, which is, you laid out, and I have them going on the ticker, so I have them here. What do you love? What are you good or great at? I liked even the, what are you great at? What does the world need? What can you be paid for? So here's something that I've talked and mentioned Rob Lowe, who's our mutual friend, a really just awesome guy, inspirational, go-getter, do-gooder. And he had shared those four questions with me back in March. And it really inspired me. And I know he had learned them from you. I now am connecting the dots. But my question for you is this, really opening up to about my own journey of charity charge and stuff, is that while there are elements when I'm in my zone, right? Like I'm in my zone with you right now. I'm feeling great about my life.
Right,
I'm
feeling right here.
It's all clicking when I do this. It's obvious that I love doing this. So there are other aspects that I hate, like the administrative work of it, or even particular the financial accounting, you know, work. We're also though a small organization, right, from a headcount standpoint. So I'm still handling a lot of that back office stuff that I need to do. And at a point in the future, I hope to be able to just outsource or offload all of it. But I guess what I'm getting at is, can you talk a little bit more about the progression of people maybe staying at their jobs or like making their transition? But here I am, the social entrepreneur running Charity Charge, but then still doing things that maybe I don't enjoy. I'm trying to come up with the right question. Like, what's your advice, I guess, for people that have started something that they're passionate about, like me with Charity Charge, but not all aspects of it do I really enjoy?
Right.
What do you tell me?
So here's what I would say. It's found in leadership can be I'm overstating this, right? Leadership in this context can be boiled down to one word: delegate. Now, here's the, everything has a challenge, right? Here's the problem with delegation is that as leaders, we don't tend to want to delegate the things we don't like. And the reason we have a barrier with that is we figure, oh my God, if I don't like it, no one's going to like it. And I certainly don't want to put this burden on someone else. So we have the barrier for delegation is actually sitting inside of us. The reality is when we choose not to delegate as leaders, we are ripping people off from living their four questions. We are literally stealing the opportunity for people around us to live their reason for being.
That's awesome.
So that's the leadership principle. So the key is, and I would even say, again, for any startup, right? You used yourself as an example, but any startup. There are people, including me, by the way, that are so charged about what you're doing that, quite frankly, they'll come work for you for just a little bit amount of money.
I've already seen it.
So pay them. Yeah.
Yep.
Because you have this purpose. You have an intrinsic purpose that is greater than the dollar. And so you bring them in at what you can afford them at today. And then if they keep doing well with you, you keep scaling them until you're paying them a livable right wage. Because we should be. That's the other side of doing, that's the other side of business being good, is that we actually pay people what they're worth. So, but when we're starting out, you got to, you start here, you kind of play both the financial as well as the emotional, and then you scale the financial to match the emotional. So that would be my encouragement. The other piece is, I would say in your world, there are some big hitters out there that they're at what Bob Buford would call their second half. They've made their money, bro. They don't need another dime. They don't need it from you. They're going to take it, but they don't need it. And so what you do is you go to one of these big hitters and they're so stoked about what you're doing that your organization as a for-profit actually becomes their purpose. And their whole thing is to be a sage to you and to take over this stuff that you're not necessarily great at and don't love so that you can soar, and you pay them a little bit of money, but you're paying them a tenth of what they're worth, but they don't care because they already made all their money. Let me give you an example. A year ago, we hired the director of sales from Coca-Cola.
Wow.
How? We're a $1.4 million nonprofit. Why? Because he wanted to do something that had purpose. He wasn't worried about the paycheck. In fact, here's what he said to me. I said, Bill, I can't afford you. He goes, all you got to do is pay me golf money. I'm like, I got golf money. I'll pay you golf money all day long. Because
wow.
He doesn't. And here we have this amazing relationship. He does mentor me. He does advise me. We work on these initiatives with the masterclasses together. So I would even say in your case, there are people out there that are well beyond you. But what you're doing is so fired up. It's so purposeful. They're like, can I get in? And you hire them for pennies on the dollar because they want to do something with meaning. They're not looking for you to make them richer. But you have to learn to delegate.
And the latter part I've seen happen, I would tell you, putting it back to you, that the latter part, getting incredible people at different ages that are willing to work for candidly less than the traditional labor market would hire them for because of their passion or inspiration for doing this.
Yes.
You know, and even like, and I say this with full credit to him, you take a guy like Kevin Price, who, you know, you initially interacted with.
Yes.
I've seen him multiple times, you know, I've said, hey, this is where we are. This is where we're going. I know this is what I'm able, you know, we're able to come see you now, but this is what we, blah, blah. And I said, are you hanging in there? Are you doing okay? And he's just said, I'm perfect. Like, I am so happy.
Yes. You know,
prior to this, he was in a corporate sales job. He, you know, he had to make like 65 cold calls a day. It was just
right.
That, you know, so the compare and contrast to this, he's just stoked to be a part of it. And in some world, the pay is irrelevant. I mean, it has, whereas right. There's like a floor, and I don't mean to go and like that it's set up that way, so to speak, right. but to find those people, that's incredible. I think the delegation piece is what I've gotten better at, but still struggled with. And I think you're spot on. I mean, I appreciated your point about whether we realize it on the surface or it's just lurking there behind the scenes, you know, this concept of, well, if I hate that work, everybody else will.
Right.
But you're right. The world is, the world and people are diverse, and that it's so interesting to think that I would be robbing someone else of what do they love? What are they good at? What does the world need? And then what can they be paid for? So
that's right.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, and we don't want to rip people off, right?
Right.
Not as a leader. We want to help them.
Walk me back. I'm just curious with Replenish Foundation. Do you mind if we go into that for a sec?
Here? Yeah, glad to.
I want to going back to kind of the origin to where we are now. Can you talk about some of the operational? So we work, for example, with a handful of different, you know, which can call themselves food banks, for example. How does your model relate? How is it different? I'm just wondering the perspective of other organizations, how maybe they can learn from your model and or partner with you in their communities.
Yeah, so the Replenish Foundation has a couple different programs that we run. And in what you're going to see is they create an ecosystem. So let me share with you one of the initiatives, and this is where we started. When we started, I told you that we empowered 600 people to create 40,000 meals in less than 2 hours to feed local children struggling with hunger. Well, here's what we learned through that process. We went to the local school and we said, listen, we want to host this event at the school in the gym. And by the way, we want to give you all of the food so that you can feed kids in your school who would go home on the weekends and have nothing to eat. And they're like, are you kidding me? You'll give us the food too? And we're like, yeah. And they said, well, can we invite our children or our students and their families to attend? We're like, yes. And the reason schools want to do that is because they're not just teaching their children math and reading and spelling and everything else and sciences. They're teaching their children, these children, a value system. So they're looking for opportunities to create service opportunities for their kids to serve, to be generous because they're teaching a value system. So the school system wants to get involved because it's good for their kids from an ethical standpoint, a value standpoint, but it's also good for them because they can now feed kids over the weekend who are on free and reduced lunch, where school is their only main stable source of food. Well, then we went to local businesses and we said to local businesses, listen, we're doing this event, the school's on board. Do you want to jump in as well? And the businesses are like, yes, you mean you're going to do all the work for us? And all we need to do is give a couple $1,000 and we can bring our employees and their families too. In other words, we can use this as a team building opportunity, a relationship building opportunity. And wait a minute, we can invite our customers to join us and our business partners to join us. And we're like, yes. So then businesses funded it, but then they used charity as an opportunity to build relationships with our customers, business partners, and employees. And of course, the school is doing all the marketing for free. And then we even went out to a local church and said, listen, here's what we're doing. Do you want to get in on this? And the local church is like, wait a minute. Yeah, we would jump in on this. And so then we began redefining how churches can actually work with businesses and can work with schools. In other words, it wasn't about religion anymore. It was about people being people and living what was in them. And this is this value to meet other people's needs. Okay, so that's one. That's one program. Really easy to get involved, especially after COVID-19, because it's a big event gathering, right? And then all the food is distributed through other nonprofit partners. So we go to other nonprofits in the city and we say, listen, you're partnered with the school in the after school backpack program. We'll give you, i.e. the school, all the food, and now you can distribute it. Everyone wins. everyone. And the barriers of entry are really low because it's with the school system and everyone trusts the school system. Okay. So then COVID-19 hits, right?
Talk to us about that.
And say again?
I said, yeah, please talk to us about that.
So COVID-19 hits and we have to shut down all of our events across the country. Craziness. So here's what happened. Our nonprofit partners who have previously taken the food from these events started calling us and saying, Ron, the supply chain is drying up. We need food for these children and for the organizations that we're serving and these families. How do we get food? So what we did is we went to our vendors and we said, listen, we need to start buying food for these organizations because their supply chain's drying up. And we turned our warehouse into kind of a manufacturing plant. So now we're paying people to create our food. So we're taking food from our vendors, food from our warehouse. And within 5 weeks, like literally 5 weeks ago, we launched this program. We have already pushed out $45,000 of food into just Maryland alone to help feed and sustain 2,000 families that are recently unemployed or have increased need because of COVID-19. And this a new initiative, it's called Generosity Packs, is already taking root in multiple counties across America. I mean, we have more and more organizations because we have over 200 nonprofit partners that we've worked with. These organizations are going, let us in. We need food for our people, for our families, let us in. So now we're launching this initiative. And then coming very, very soon is something called Generosity Can, where we have nonprofit partners coming to us now. They're saying, Ron, first of all, we can't believe that you got 400 people to show up at this event. We can't get 40 people to show up at our events. Would you be willing to share your volunteers with us? So we're starting a program called Generosity Can, we've already started doing this, we're piloting it and fine-tuning it, where we are now mobilizing our 65,000 volunteers to begin serving on an ongoing basis with the nonprofits in their community that are on the ground 24/7 making it happen. So that's a little bit more, that's kind of the ecosystem that's forming. There are some other things in the works as well. And then of course there are all the masterclasses. And the reason for the masterclasses is number one, we really believe that people should be living on purpose in their own lives. And we've already talked about that, right? The second is we believe that businesses should be developing philanthropic strategies that accelerate their business. Like, it's amazing to me. Well, let me tell you in the form of a story. I was meeting with the owner of a very large business who runs restaurants. And I said, every time you open a restaurant, it costs you about $500,000. She's like, dead on. I said, I would imagine you have a strategy with measurable ROIs and dashboards and everything to make sure you're going to get the return on your investment. She goes, of course we do. I said, do you have that same type of strategy for your philanthropic investments? And she goes, oh, no, we don't. I said, so over the next year to 2 years, you're going to invest probably $100,000, if not more, in philanthropic work and charity work. And you're telling me you don't have a strategy for it. That's where I want to help you. So one of our masterclasses is helping businesses develop a philanthropic strategy that aligns with their company strategy. It aligns their people, their passion, and their product in philanthropy to accelerate their business. This is well beyond the one-for-one model that we're all familiar with coming out of Tom's Shoes, right? This is full alignment. This is integrated marketing. This is live dashboards. This is measurable results. This is KPIs where we come in and help align this so that when a company invests dollars in philanthropy, it's actually simultaneously going to also help accelerate their business with soft and hard measurable outcomes.
Wow. That piece is really cool.
Because here's what we know, Stephen, and you know this, we all know this. Imagine right now for a moment, a world where you wake up that every business you interact with is solving a social, environmental, or cultural issue. What would happen to the issues that we have in America if every business you did that with, that you interact with, did that?
Well, it'd be amazing, but I also know, look, statistically, I mean, the bulk of giving actually comes from individuals. So it's 73% of all philanthropic dollars, well, 73, 75, whatever it is now, comes from individuals. So I'm all about whatever mechanisms we can create to make giving back as a business easier, more attractive, whatever you want to call it. And we need more of that, you know, to start moving the needle. It's not about, you know, I mean, $1,000 on a micro scale, like right on a one-off, $1,000 can help in here, but we need to create powerful mechanisms for businesses to be able to give back and to want to be able to give back. What you're doing.
Well, and what's interesting, when that happens too, we need to understand that nonprofits need businesses, and we need to understand that for-profits, businesses, need nonprofits. What we need to do is we need to match for-profits that have the heart of a nonprofit with nonprofits who have the mind of a business. And when we match those two together, magic happens, because we actually begin meeting each other's needs. Because the business is producing capital, financial capital, economic capital, but the nonprofit sector that they're partnered with, a true partnership, is producing social capital. And when you put those two together based upon their unique strengths, the world begins to change. So now you can see the ecosystem that we've built between feeding kids, mobilizing people, mobilizing businesses, but now the masterclasses, which we're seeking to empower this, because at the end of the day, my goal is to establish generosity as the new gold standard. Because when we do that, society as we know it changes for the good.
Mm. It's inspiring. I love it. I'm really glad that you came on, you know, not just this show, but more so just from here. This is our starting point to really develop a really great friendship.
Yeah.
It's really cool what you're doing. You know, for people that are interested in learning more, I would tell them to go to replenishfoundation.org, right?
Yep. Yeah. That easy.
It's as straightforward as that. You know, I'm excited to, you know, initially be able to partner up with you and to do more that we're going to get into. Once I stop the recording, we'll talk a little bit more. But Ron, this is really cool. I want to final one last recap, because I think that they were really powerful. You know, your talk about the masterclass, I'll push out some links about that as well. Or whatever you share for us to give out.
I'll get that to you.
But these four questions: what do you love? What are you great at? What does the world need? What can you be paid for? So I think that was good. And I appreciate your advice for me to delegate. And that by delegating, I'm giving someone the opportunity to, you know, live those, you know, four questions, or live their life, you know, in a happy, fulfilled place. So it's really good stuff.
That's right.
Thank you so much, Ron, for being on the show.
Oh, Stephen, great being here, man. Thanks for the opportunity, buddy.
My pleasure.